Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate, personalized service. Check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry, with 23 years in the business. Joe's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. All right, it's 2026, folks. Welcome to the new year. Hopefully, you know, the first couple of days went fine, and then boom. Anyway, we're going to talk about that. We got a lot to talk about today. I do want to make a quick shout out to our friends in the Des Moines Iowa Session for our bumper music. Thanks, folks. But yeah, in addition to talking about Venezuela, because we must, we're also going to talk about eminent domain. A couple interesting things happening there relevant to Trump's vetoes of bills that passed without much controversy and were led by his Republican colleagues in the U.S. House and Senate. Interesting. We'll also talk about negative campaigning rearing its ugly head here in Iowa, as it does in a lot of places. We'll also talk about a scientific quote, I'm putting scientific in quote, study about Roundup. But first, Venezuela. So you all must remember how Trump talked about regime change during the campaign. He was very much against it, right? So in Florida, there's a clip from Fox News in which he says, quote, "We do not seek war. We do not seek nation building. We do not seek regime change." That's pretty clear, right? And he reiterated that a lot of places, including Dubuque, Iowa, where he said, quote, "We don't want to be the world's policeman." But, you know, the truth is never something that Donald Trump has embraced with much passion. And so, you know, we know now that those campaign promises about nation building and regime change and war were lies. And we know that, I mean, what's just happened in Venezuela, we already knew it, but Venezuela is kind of the icing on the cake. We know that this invasion has nothing to do with drugs, too. I mean, he's talking about drugs, right? It has to do with nothing. It has to do with power and control. And power is money, and specifically oil money. Control is his need to satisfy his narcissistic, you know, personality that wants to just manage everybody and always be praised for it. So, you know, and again, regarding oil, did a little digging here. The fossil fuel industry gave Trump and his affiliated PAC $75 million just this last election cycle. $75 million from Big Oil. That does not include the additional $19 million that Big Oil gave to Trump's inauguration. Oil industry also spent over $100 million to lobby both Trump and, of course, Congress for its interest in 2025. $100 million to lobby. From one industry. So yeah, this has to do with giving Big Oil a chance to finally claim the oil from the country that has more of it than any other country in the world. Yeah, look at this. A great chart here that Bill McKibben shared in one of his memos. 303 billion barrels of oil reserves in Venezuela. 303. That's way, way ahead of Saudi Arabia, the second biggest in terms of the reserves, the country with the second biggest amount of reserves, 267 billion barrels. And a barrel of oil is what, 42 gallons, I think? Iran is next. Canada is next. Yeah, well, if they were on 51st day, we could have that oil too, right? Iraq is next, then the UAE, then Kuwait, then Russia. And then, in what, ninth place, the U.S. with 74 billion barrels of oil reserves. So Venezuela is head and shoulders above everyone else in terms of how much oil it's got in the ground. And now apparently it's our oil. I mean, Trump's making, you know, when we've invaded countries in the past, and we do a lot of that. Come on, let's, you know, America has done some good things in the world. We've also done some terrible things and a lot of terrible things. And a lot of those we justify sometimes on preventing communism, you know. But usually we're after resources. This time, the president and his accolade, his apologists, his sycophants, whatever, are not apologizing at all for why they're going in. It's about oil. It's about oil. You know? Now, interestingly, Trump is also making it clear that there are other countries that might be invaded. Now, this went so well. I mean, he's so excited about how well this went. He watched it on TV. He was so excited about how well it went. He's now talking about, well, Colombia, you know, Mexico, Greenland, Cuba. And these are all countries Trump's threatening. Now, none of those countries are on that list of top 10 nations with billions of gallons of oil reserves. But he has other gripes with Mexico. Greenland, actually, who knows what's under the ice in Greenland completely, but lots of minerals, key minerals. And Cuba, of course. I am surprised that Cuba has remained independent for so long, given how close they are to the U.S. and how contrary they are to our national interest. I will not be surprised to see Trump try to play some similar effort in Cuba and Colombia. I think going after Mexico and Greenland, and by Greenland I mean Denmark as well, that's going to be a little bit different. But we should not brush off these references as just a ranting of a madman. I mean, I think he really means it. And again, as I said, this is about two things: power and control. The power is oil. And if these nations are not where we're going to get oil, okay, the power is oil, but also a lot of rare minerals. And Greenland, that may be one of the big reasons to go into Greenland for Trump. But a lot of it has to do with his ego, his narcissism. I mean, who else wants to put their name on everything? Coins, stadiums, national parks, the Kennedy Center. He's always asking whether or not there's room for another bust on Mount Rushmore. I mean, this guy is a pathological narcissist. And so even if these other countries don't have oil, his narcissism may lead him to invade them for some other justification. Probably in Mexico's case, it'll be for drugs. And you can make a stronger case that Mexico is a problem for drug trafficking into the U.S. And maybe I'll get in trouble for saying this, folks, but the biggest problem with drugs in the U.S. is that Americans use them. You know, we don't have to use them. Nancy Reagan, who I rarely praise, might have had it right when she said, just say no. I know it's more complicated than that. But again, if the market wasn't there, the traffic wouldn't be there. But to be clear, the traffic is not from Venezuela. You know, Venezuela plays a very, very minor role in the whole drug trafficking situation. And certainly not when it comes to opioids. You know, China and Mexico are much more central to opioid traffic than Venezuela. Venezuela, sure, when it comes to cocaine, they play a minor role. They play a bit role in manufacturing cocaine. But, you know, drug seizure data from the UN Office on Drugs and Crime shows that that Venezuela is not a very prominent supplier of cocaine to the U.S. Certainly not as much as some other South American and Latin American countries. So you know, again, the evidence that drugs were the reason we went into Venezuela, it's not there. In fact, the facts are clearly in opposition to that contention. I know that was the original reason that Trump launched, you know, initiated aggression against Venezuela by attacking these boats that allegedly were carrying drugs. We'll never know because they were attacked and over 100 people killed. Before we have any idea, we don't know who they are. We don't know what they were carrying. And actually, maybe some people do, but that's never come to light. So we know that it's not drugs, because now that we're in Venezuela, you know, drugs aren't even mentioned. It's oil that gets mentioned over and over again. It's been really clear that oil is the reason we are there. Yet look at the lies. The politicians who are falling all over themselves to tell Trump he's great and that he did a great thing and that we needed to do this. Here's our governor here in Iowa, Kim Reynolds. Quote, "For long, Americans have suffered because of the dangerous and deadly drugs flooding into our country from Venezuela." Okay, so again, that is factually wrong. The drugs flooding into our country from Venezuela. No, it's certainly not opioids, and only in a very, very limited sense is it cocaine. So, yeah, and Americans have suffered. I mean, blame the whole problem on the supplier, right? Don't blame the people who choose to take these drugs, all right? Yeah, I guess that's a Republican way of doing things when you want to defend a president that you have to defend or your political career will be shot down. I mean, again, remember, Kim Reynolds, our governor, supported Ron DeSantis. So she's had to go the extra mile to repair the damage and to suck up to the president after doing something as horrible as supporting his opponent. So Grassley, I don't know how many people follow Chuck Grassley on Twitter, but he had this style he developed years ago, and he maintains this style where he does these bizarre abbreviations. And I'll try to read it verbatim, but I don't know if I can pull it off. Prez Trump directed military forces number two bring narco-terrorist Maduro to justice after his role in trafficking drugs, resulting in death of far too many Americans. 25 years ago, Venezuela was, all caps, a prosperous economy. Okay, so there's a couple things here. You know, again, Grassley just mimicking the Trump line that it's about drugs, you know. But then also throwing in the real reason, that's that Venezuela's economy was prosperous. That was back when U.S. oil companies had a strong foothold in the country and were able to basically dominate the country's oil industry. And again, the problem is that the industry was nationalized by Maduro's predecessor, Hugo Chavez. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. I want to give you one more quote here. Zach Nunn, our congressman here in central Iowa. "Maduro was a narco-terrorist who took over Venezuela as an illegitimate dictator. His gangs are responsible for the deaths of thousands of Americans. He will now face justice." Okay, again, just it's almost like Trump just handed Republican members of Congress and the U.S. Senate, "Here's the talking point that you must use," and they're all like saying it. I mean, again, Maduro was a lot of things. He's not a narco-terrorist. He may be an illegitimate dictator. I don't think many people outside of his base in Venezuela feel very strong, very positive about him. But his gangs are responsible for the deaths of thousands of Americans. Okay. You know, what these leaders seem to want to ignore, these Republican leaders want to ignore, is if people, you know, again, if people didn't take these drugs, there would be no drug cartels. Okay. Because it's all their fault. It's all Maduro's fault that, you know, hundreds of thousands of Americans have suffered. Okay. So, you know, and there's no more proof needed that Trump is being a hypocrite about this drug thing. But if you want a little more evidence, and this has been talked about, but I'll reiterate it. Pardoning the former president of Honduras, Juan Hernandez. You know, Hernandez was serving a 45-year prison sentence because a jury, last March of 2024, found him guilty of conspiring to import cocaine into the U.S. We're talking about 400 tons of cocaine. And we're talking about, I mean, he Hernandez had this deal with the drug cartels, taking millions of bribes. I mean, you know, you obviously don't really give a dang about Americans who die from drug overdose if you're freeing up a guy who the courts found guilty of, you know, trafficking over 400 tons of cocaine. So, I mean, you are all hypocrites. You don't give a dang about people afflicted with drug addiction. This is not about stopping drug trafficking. This is about, again, power, meaning oil and rare earth minerals, and control. Again, remember Trump, again, during the campaign, repeatedly saying he was against regime change, against wars, against being the world's policeman. Now what is he saying? He will, quote, run Venezuela until there's a, quote, safe, proper, and judicious transition. And I'm not going to play the clip from you where he butchers the word judicious, but remember he aced his cognitive test, so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt on that he can manage the word judicious in a judicious manner. Anyway, that was a horrible pun. Sorry, folks. So, yeah, he's going to run Venezuela. And this fast, I was assuming that the woman who got the Nobel Peace Prize, that she would be welcomed back in and given the, you know, handed the seat, you know. But no, Trump and company are handing the presidency to Maduro's second in command. So somebody from his administration, this is Delcy Rodriguez. She's now been sworn in as the new president, you know, sworn in by Venezuelans, presumably under the cold watch of the U.S. military. I mean, talk about election fraud. I don't doubt that there was election fraud in Venezuela. But gosh, this beats all. So Trump says, quote, about Delcy Rodriguez, she's essentially willing to do what we think is necessary to make Venezuela great again. And that's what it's about. It's what Trump thinks is necessary to make Venezuela great again. And that is to let the U.S. oil companies come in and take over. And we know where that money's going to go. You know, you're not going to see a lot of that stay in Venezuela. As the tiny upper crust of the wealthiest Americans and the wealthiest oligarchs of the world have, you know, as that, again, what did I read recently? That a few decades ago, maybe back in the 70s, the average CEO salary was, what, 20 times that of their, you know, average worker? Now it's 300 times. So, you know, where is the oil money going to go? It's going to go to the upper crust, you know. And I think most Venezuelans realize this. You know, there are lots of posts about people, you know, shouting in the streets and rejoicing that the U.S. has come in and saved them from Maduro. And a lot of those, actually, I want to share this with you. There's there's an AI, you know, I like to look at AI once in a while just to just to see what AI has to say about itself. So I can't find it right now, folks, but it was basically AI was saying that, all kinds of fake AI-generated, you know, memes and videos about Maduro and about Venezuelans cheering for his departure, so much of that is just fake. There's a lot of it being generated. No doubt. And that was from AI. Oh, yeah, here we go. Many of the widely circulated videos claiming to show Venezuelans inside the country happily celebrating a U.S. attack and the capture of Maduro are fake or misleading, often using AI-generated content or old footage. However, there are also verified videos of Venezuelan expatriates celebrating the news in other countries. Okay, that's from AI. AI being used to pretend that Venezuelans are ecstatic about Maduro's removal. But there are some legitimate ones, and those are about Venezuelans who live in the U.S. or other countries. So anyway, I put up a post on Facebook about this, and I don't normally get this kind of traffic, but over 200 comments. I want to share a few of them with you and some of the responses too. Again, my audience is pretty broad, and Frank writes, Ed, what do you call 100 to 200 of your fellow citizens dying each year to opioid overdose? I'm thinking that's the evil, not Trump. Okay. As noted, it's not about drugs. Janet says, the people of Venezuela are celebrating so many videos on Twitter. Okay, Janet, as I noted, according to AI, most of those videos are fake. So, Benj writes, Ed, do you realize that most Venezuelans have been praying for this day? And Nancy writes, how does the Democrats not know what has been happening in Venezuela? I'm not even quite sure what that means. We know that Maduro is not an upstanding leader. We suspect that the last election was probably stolen. We know a thing or two about stolen elections in this country, don't we? Yeah. Kent says, Trump just plucked his evil POS out of there. And if you can't figure out from the reaction of Venezuelans, you are completely blinded by TDS. That's a Trump derangement syndrome, which is just another type of name calling along with evil POS. And I responded to Kent. My thought, you know, I thought Trump's base was against regime change wars. If it's all responsible to pluck out any foreign open quote evil POS, there are lots more countries for Trump to invade, including Russia and China. Joel made a comment that I think I agree with. He says, quote, I would suggest that this is simply the first clear demonstration of the end of Pax Americana, the so-called rules-based international order following World War II, and the return of great power competition. This is an early shot in a new era of resource wars. I think he's right about that, and that's disturbing, but again, probably accurate. Frank says, Ed, Trump said Venezuela stole our oil platforms or rigs. So I Googled this. Venezuela did not, open quote, steal America oil platforms in the common sense, but rather nationalize its oil industry in the 70s and 2000s, which involved seizing assets and operations from foreign companies, including U.S. firms. So, Ed, this sounds a bit like we are taking back what belonged to the U.S. in the first place. Okay. In the first place. Well, whose land is that? Whose resources are those? Why did our oil companies get in there in the first place and quote, you know, create these assets? It's called nationalization. And it's a country saying, hey, you know, these resources, this land, this industry was illegitimately taken from our people, and we're going to return it. And there's a long history. You should do a Wikipedia search for nationalization. The list is incredibly long. And the list just for Venezuela. I mean, it was in 2007, May 1st of 2007, the government of Venezuela stripped the world's biggest oil companies of operational control over massive Orinoco Belt crude projects. That was done by Hugo Chavez. The next year, Chavez ordered the nationalization of the cement industry. So it goes on and on. And, you know, the one place I know a little bit more about than Venezuela is Guatemala. I studied this years ago. So the big fruit companies back then, Dole, Del Monte, Chiquita, they had gained control over much of Guatemala's farmland. They did that through manipulating government officials, influencing the media, all done behind closed doors and backed up by the threat of force. And this caused an incredibly lopsided situation in terms of land distribution, land ownership, with these big fruit companies owning much of the land and poor farmers dependent upon bananas for export and making very little money at it. So in 1952, a democratically elected president, Jacobo Arbenz, he redistributed large, specifically unused land, land holdings that belonged to these big fruit companies that wasn't being used. He redistributed that land to landless peasants. And some of that included uncultivated land owned by the United Fruit Company. So that ticked off the United Fruit Company, Big Banana, let's call it, and they lobbied the U.S. government to intervene, and they obliged. The U.S. government led a CIA orchestrated coup, and in 1954, that coup overthrew the duly elected government of Jacobo Arbenz, installing a pro-business military ruler who promptly reversed all those land reforms and returned the land to the big fruit companies. That's how we work, folks. That's how our government accomplishes regime change. And again, sometimes under the guise of preventing communism from spreading, sometimes under the guise of preventing drugs from being trafficked. But really, in the end, it's all about the money. It's all about making sure that big industries, in this case, banana. And where do you think the name Banana Republic comes from? Banana Republic, it's our creation. We create Banana Republics by using our military and other resources to install a government that's friendly to the big corporations that we are beholden to. So the new government in Guatemala, Armas, he was a suppressive dictator. And by the 1960s, he was so bad, there was active revolt among the Guatemalan peasantry. And that lasted for over 30 years. You know, and I remember this very well through the 90s. You know, and there were about 200,000 people killed. And mostly those were native people, native Guatemalan people, Mayan people. So in 1965, what do? We say, oh, we're going to fix the problem we created? No, we're going to make it worse. We helped modernize the dictator's troops, and that resulted in more kidnappings, more assassinations, including farm workers, student activists, Catholic priests, and labor leaders who were opposed to the U.S.-installed puppet, the pro-big fruit government. So more people were killed in this conflict in Guatemala than in any other Latin American war. And is that what we want in Venezuela? Yeah, again, except instead of bananas, it's now oil. One more comment from my Facebook post from Anne. If we just start going in and kidnapping leaders and running countries, what's to stop someone from doing it to us or to Zelensky? It wasn't our place to do this. You know, and maybe that leads to a good question. What would Jesus do? You know, all the Bible thumpers who support Trump, what would Jesus do? Well, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. Do we really want, would we tolerate somebody coming into our country, sneaking into the White House and kidnapping President Trump and Melania in the middle of the night? Would we support that? No, I mean, I cannot stand Donald Trump. And I would be very much opposed to that. I can't imagine how we would feel if that happened to us. So yeah, It's okay. We do it to somebody else. Well, again, what happens next? I don't know, but I don't think it's going to be good. And I think we should pay attention to what happened in Guatemala decades ago. This is not going to be good for the Venezuelan people, for the Venezuelan economy. It's not going to be good for stability throughout South America, throughout Latin America, or what Trump prefers to call our hemisphere. Yeah. Again, Marco Rubio told NBC's Meet the Press that, quote, we expect to see more compliance and cooperation than we were previously receiving. So in other words, if Venezuela doesn't bow the knee to Trump, doesn't do what we want as we, quote, run the country, it's only going to get worse. Now, not a great way to start the year, folks, but that's my take on it for what it's worth. Got to take a short break here. There may be an additional crack in the MAGA base, given two Trump vetoes of bills that Republicans wanted. I'll be back in a minute to talk more about that on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Hey, Ed Fallon with you here, back with you on the Fallon Forum. Thanks to our partners and sponsors, including Catholic Peace Ministry. CPM promotes peaceful resolution to war and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, one more thought on Venezuela before I move on to something else here, folks. Part of Trump's stated reason for taking over the country is to prevent China from having a foothold, quote, in our hemisphere. Well, Mr. Trump, I got to tell you, I'm sorry, that horse has left the barn. Again, Iowa farmers, you know, either the majority or the biggest client we have for hogs and soybeans is China. And more importantly, you know, Smithfield, owned by China, is the biggest pork processor, and I think maybe even nearly the biggest beef processor in the country. Syngenta, also owned by China, is one of the biggest seed and, you know, tech innovation farm companies, ag companies in the country, owned by China. So, you know, here's an idea. President Trump, I recommend you go in and nationalize Smithfield and Syngenta. Take them back from China. Come on, do it. Yeah, take a hint from what Venezuela did years ago to the U.S. oil industry. All right, so Trump vetoed a couple bills that Republicans want. This, we'll see if it causes a deepening of the rift in the MAGA base. I don't know. We'll find out. Oh, yeah, hey, the third reason why this Venezuelan thing attack occurred is to distract. Distract from the Epstein files, distract from the horrible economy in this country. I should have said that. I'm saying it now. All right, so Colorado. Lauren Boebert, one of Trump's biggest supporters on the right, who did challenge him over the Epstein files recently, is now not a happy camper over Trump vetoing a major drinking water project in Colorado. This was a project called Finish the Arkansas Valley Conduit Act, and it was approved unanimously by the House and the Senate. So why did Trump veto this non-controversial water project that everybody wanted? Well, it's about vengeance. We have a vengeful president, folks, and what's he mad at this time? So Trump had vowed to retaliate against Colorado, again, blue state, right, for keeping an ally of his, a woman named Tina Peters, keeping her in prison. So he pardoned late last year. And that's fine. That relieved her of federal charges, but she's also in jail because of state charges, and she remained in jail. So she's a former Colorado County clerk, and she was serving a 9-year prison term after being convicted on state charges for illegally tampering with voting machines back in the 2020 presidential election. So again, Trump's pardon, only covers the federal charges, not the state ones. The state says, no, she needs to stay in prison. So do you get back? Do they get back at Colorado for doing that? Trump, you know, Trump vetoed a bill that Boebert, you know, one of his key allies, was the sponsor of. Now she, again, to her credit, condemned Trump's veto of what she called a completely non-controversial bipartisan bill. She added her hope that, quote, this veto has nothing to do with political retaliation for calling out corruption and demanding accountability. Well, she could have just said, I know that this has everything to do with retaliation. So more specifically about the Arkansas Valley Conduit Act, the bill was intended to fund this. It's been a decades-long project that wants to bring drinking water to 39 communities in the eastern part of Colorado, the Republican part of Colorado, the Eastern Plains. That's where the groundwater is pretty high in salt and wells sometimes unleash radioactivity into the water supply. I'm not sure where that's coming from. But that's what Trump vetoed. Okay. We'll see how Boebert and other Republican rank-and-file voters in eastern Colorado feel about that. The other veto, again, these are the first two vetoes of his term, of his second term. Trump vetoed a bill to help a Florida a tribe, the Miccosukee tribe, it involved expanding the land and also relating to some federal and land management issues. I'm not sure of all the details, but this is the tribe that is next door, right now, or they're as close as anybody is to Alligator Alcatraz. And that's a detention center, of course, that's come under a lot of fire. The Miccosukee tribe is suing it for a specific reason, and I wasn't clear what that was either, but the bill would have expanded the tribal land and given the Miccosukees flood protection for one of their small villages. Who is one of the big advocates for this bill? Republican Senator Rick Scott. He's been involved in several recent bills concerning Native American land in Florida, primarily focusing on efforts to protect tribal land from federal overreach and to address specific land management issues. So Trump vetoed that. We'll see how that goes down. So related to that, the Summit carbon dioxide pipeline, this is somewhat related. It has to do with land and Trump, who, again, you know, I was always surprised that landowners, rural voters in the upper Midwest weren't more concerned about Trump, because he made it clear, one thing he was honest about was he supports eminent domain. He's used it on his to expand his properties. And eminent domain has been a huge issue. We saw an entire turnover of the state legislature in South Dakota because of the threat of eminent domain to build this carbon dioxide pipeline. So I am pretty sure that the guy behind the pipeline, Bruce Rastetter, did not expect to see this kind of resistance from farmers. I guess his thinking was, oh, corn farmers are going to love a pipeline that is going to, you know, to transport carbon dioxide, which allows them to grow more corn. But it hasn't gone that way at all. So we'll see what happens. We'll be talking more about this, because it will be coming up in the Iowa legislature this year. It may well come up again in other states as well. We'll see what happens. Related to that, of course, the Dakota Access Pipeline, this is an unfortunate piece of news. For a long time, the court has been sitting on a filing by the Standing Rock Sioux, who alleged that that the pipeline was wrongly routed close to their main water source. And the court ruling just came down against the tribe. We'll see if they appeal. But the fact that it took this long, and it wasn't, I should say, court. It was a judicial proceeding, but before the Army Corps of Engineers. But the fact that it took the Army Corps of Engineers this long to do anything, and again, they had the Biden administration to address the problem as well. that time frame. So, you know, I don't know where this goes next, folks, but I will say this, that the experience that communities and farmers and environmentalists and others acquired during the fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline has been very instructive in guiding opponents to the carbon dioxide pipeline. Now, you know, again, if this was water, I mean, in states where you need a water pipeline, I think everybody would be for it. I mean, who would want to not support a pipeline carrying water? Again, providing it's done correctly and doesn't destroy the soil, that's been one of the complaints about the Dakota Access Pipeline. Complaints about the Dakota Access Pipeline, when it was built, ruining the topsoil. I mean, you've got to preserve that topsoil. You don't preserve it by mixing it with the subsoil. So that's that might be a concern about a water pipeline. But again, I can't think of anybody being opposed to that for the most part. Anyway, enough said about that. I got to talk about negative campaigning. I hate to talk about it, but I got to do it. Ed Fallon with you folks, back in a minute on the Fallon Forum.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village.
Back to the Fallon Forum, Ed Fallon with you folks. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture by Synthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. All right, so I detest negative campaigning. There are candidates that I was supporting years ago that I bailed on because they switched to negative attack ads. And I told them ahead of time. Actually, one of them was Tom Vilsack. Another was Jack Hatch. I said, look, I'm going to support you, but if it gets negative, if you start attacking your opponent and it gets ugly and you start saying things that are untrue or unhelpful, I'm going to bail. And I did. And I think it's legitimate to point out differences between you and your opponent. I think it's most important to focus on what you're all about. But I want to talk about two attack pieces that really bug me. Both are from Democrats. One of them is from, was written by Francis Baugus, who I've known a long, long time. And it was published in Bleeding Heartland and circulated elsewhere as well. And it was an attack piece on Sarah Trungariat. And, I mean, he doesn't come off as if he's supporting Trungariat's opponent, but he is. He's held a house party for her. He's donated to her campaign. So he's clearly against Sarah Trungariat, but doesn't say it. But he points out a talk she gave back in 2023 for the Des Moines Register's Storytellers Project. And in the video, Trone Garriott describes the first wedding she performed to marry a pair of Satanists. Then Baucus writes, "I'll be clear, I have no personal issue with Satanists. Like many other Iowans, I believe their First Amendment rights should be protected just like everyone else's." Okay, so if he had no trouble with Satanists, he probably wouldn't have brought it up because that's kind of tangential. But he goes on to say, "What bothers me is the tone Trone Garriott used when talking about working class people, whether they, you know, and you look, it's, you really have to stretch to find that in the speech she gave." So I actually went to the speech. I listened to it. It was beautiful. It was powerful. And it was mostly about her learning new things about people and learning to accept them in a Christian way. She's a Lutheran minister. It was really, I mean, if you watch the speech, you'd be really hard-pressed not to be very, you know, very taken by it. You have to really, really want to find negative stuff in it, which Baucus clearly did. So it just, and he's arguing that, well, because of the way she talks about rural people, she doesn't, I mean, and that's like, that itself is inaccurate. But his contention is because of the way she talks about rural people, she's never going to win the 3rd Congressional District. Okay, well, I mean, yeah, I was pleased to see that there were 3 comments in the Bleeding Heartland story that were all critical of what Baucus was trying to say. There was a comment by Kimberly Baucus, and yeah, no surprise, his daughter, who wrote, this was on Facebook, actually. She wrote, quote, "Well-meaning folks don't understand that politics today is a blood sport. Everything is on the table and it's fair game. Don't like it? Stay on the porch." Okay, that right there is everything that's wrong with politics today. Politics is a blood sport. Anything is fair game. Come on, folks. I mean, if you really believe that, you know, then you're part of the problem. You're part of the problem. And you know, after this 220-mile march I did, one thing I heard over and over again is, I want candidates to tell me what they believe in, what they stand for. I don't want negative attacks. And unfortunately, negative attacks do work. So I know that's why politicians do them. But I think that one against Sarah Trone Garriott will probably backfire because it's so lame. But that said, I think it's important to respond to these things. I want to tell you one more out there that's bugging me, and that's Christina Bohannon, who I have nothing against. She's running for the Democratic nomination in the Southeast District of Iowa. She put out a piece, actually several pieces, that I believe are going to presumed Democratic supporters. And it's you've seen this before. It's got the pretty colored photo of the candidate on one side, and you flip to the other side, and it's the ugly black and white photo of the opponent, in this case, Marianne Miller Meeks, who looks like a witch. I mean, her hair is just all over the place. She's snarling. That is so wrong. You know, if you believe you have to stoop to that level, then you need to do some soul searching. I mean, I have nothing against Christina Bohannon. I've liked what she's done and said in the past, but this mailing, I don't know who's advising her in doing these kinds of attack pieces, but they better reconsider that, because I'm not the only voter out there who finds that detestable. And part of my perspective on detestable negative campaigning is very personal. When I ran for governor, one of my opponents, he was very clever about it. He didn't put it right out there himself. He had other people spread the word that I was anti-gay, anti-woman, anti-union. And he did that in Johnson County, which is the most, you know, quote, liberal county in the state, and a very important county in a Democratic primary. It's a county I should have won. I won 8 counties. That should have been the 9th county that I won, and I didn't, because I thought it was so stupid that I wouldn't bother to push back against it. The same year that I ran for governor, Denise O'Brien ran for Secretary of Agriculture, and she was ahead in the polls of her Republican. She won the primary, and she was ahead in the polls. Just going into the last month or so of the election, and her Republican opponent came out with a horrible attack piece that alleged that her husband, Larry Harris, was guilty of animal cruelty. They have a farm in Cass County. Now, Larry Harris is the most wonderful, gentlest, kindest guy you'll ever meet, and the allegation was completely false. But instead of effectively pushing back against it, they said, this is too stupid. You know, we're going to ignore it. Just like I ignored the Ed Fallon is anti-woman, anti-gay, anti-unions. So, you know, I learned the hard way that you have to respond to negative attack ads. You can't just ignore them. And I sure got it when I ran for Congress. I mean, and it was some crazy stuff, too. Because I had made a mistake, I voted for Al Gore. I voted for Ralph Nader back in 2000. Again, not my brightest decision. I was really ticked off at Al Gore for a number of reasons, especially for choosing Joe Lieberman as his running mate, who ended up becoming a Republican, by the way. So, I voted for Nader. I said it wasn't the best idea, but that didn't stop my opponent in the Democratic primary, Leonard Boswell, from attacking me on it. And this is great stuff. It shows a really goofy picture of me. And says, Ed Fallon believed Ralph Nader. He helped elect George Bush by endorsing and actively campaigning for Ralph Nader. With nearly 4,000 of our soldiers killed in Iraq, Ed Fallon's support for Ralph Nader is unforgivable. So basically, even though Al Gore won Iowa, I elected George Bush. I caused the Iraq War. Ironically, my opponent voted for the war. So, I mean, this stuff is crazy. It's horrible. But it has to be pushed back. You cannot ignore it. You have to push back against it. Or people, even if they don't like it, it makes an impression on them. So, yeah. Negative campaigning. Bad stuff. Challenge it, folks. I got to take a short break. When I come back, Kathy Burns will join me. We're going to be talking about a study on glyphosate. Back in a minute on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact DavidDrakeFamilyPsychiatry.com. Hey, Kathy Burns is with me, folks, and we're talking about Roundup, also known as glyphosate, and a scientific study that apparently wasn't so scientific after all.
Yeah, there was news coming out about that. The editor-in-chief of the journal that had published it back in 2000, the journal was called Regulatory Toxicology and Pharmacology. The current editor-in-chief has recently retracted the study, saying that It had questionable author accountability. And there were so many different news stories, I thought, I just need to piece this together like a story. What was the year-by-year decade by decade story.
Yeah, when did glyphosate first hit the market?
1974.
Wow, and again, we're talking about glyphosate Roundup. Same thing.
Right. Yeah. Same is the key ingredient in the product called Roundup. It was released by the Monsanto company, later bought by Bayer.
Yeah, and then didn't we start seeing cancer incidents start happening shortly thereafter?
Well, in the early 80s, lab tests were flagged, and there were some studies of Midwestern farmers that were exposed to herbicides that contained glyphosate. They showed an increase in certain cancers, and so people were becoming aware that there was a problem with them then. But in the 1990s or so, Monsanto had already bought hadn't been bought by Bayer yet. They hired, they used some of their own employees to create some, quote, studies.
What could go wrong
that
there?
That indicated glyphosate was safe. They quoted other studies, but they were the studies that favored them. And then scientists were found who would take payment to put their names on the studies, kind of like the tobacco companies did.
So what, I mean, I'm assuming that there's some involvement, and since Roundup isn't limited to the United States, what is the WHO, the World Health Organization, did they have any assessment of its safety?
Well, 15 years after the paper was published in 2000, in 2015, the World Health Organization classified glyphosate as, quote, probably carcinogenic to humans.
So again, that's 40 years after it was initially introduced?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And in 2017, some documents were produced during a legal proceeding against Monsanto that revealed that the article was ghostwritten.
Ghostwritten by employees of Monsanto.
Monsanto. But despite this information, the journal at the time still did not retract the story. In 2018...
How were they legally able to get away with that? Gosh.
Lobbying. In 2018, Bayer bought Monsanto, and they have since then paid millions of dollars to settle lawsuits brought by people who've been exposed to glyphosate. They're paying settlements.
And we're talking about thousands of people who've been poisoned by this chemical.
The damage has been terrible. In Iowa, in 2024 and 25, the Iowa Senate the Senate passed bills to shield the pesticide companies from certain lawsuits, and that was defeated in the House.
And Bayer, I mean, their lobbying effort was huge. I want to say that they spent, $200,000 or so trying to get the Senate. I mean, when I say spent, lobbying efforts, but also campaign donations.
Well, guess what? They're still not done, because right now Bayer is currently donating about $1,000 apiece to various Iowa politicians.
I'm curious, all Democrats, all Republicans, or are they playing across the aisle there?
I didn't look at the list. But I think that they need to work harder now, because just this past February in 2025, the Iowa Cancer Registry released its official report that Iowa has the second highest rising cancer rate in the nation.
Right.
And there are more studies linking our water, products in the soil, to farm chemicals.
You know, and I've seen, I mean, we had a neighbor here in our neighborhood who sprayed Roundup, and I've kind of been sharing this information with him. Mm-hmm. I think he's kind of had second thoughts about whether or not that's a good idea. You know, because again, you read the packet, you read some of the stories, it sounds like it's safe. You dig in, it's not. It's not safe.
The paper originally published that was written by Monsanto employees, for the most part, didn't say it was safe, but safe if used as directed. And the hard part is the Environmental Protection Agency currently is keeping glyphosate products included in their safe if used as directed, and so they are not paying attention to the fact that the original study that they're using to defend that was retracted.
So speaking of our neighborhood, we also have another neighbor, Austin Baith. He's the state representative from this area. He's been kind of leading the charge on trying to bring daylight to this whole issue. He's an internal medicine and palliative care doctor, and He recently posted a very instructive, I thought, piece on Facebook, and maybe it was elsewhere, about just how dangerous this stuff is.
He explains it very well, so It's worth a listen.
Hey, Kathy, thanks for joining me. Folks, thanks for tuning into today's program. Thanks to our production team, which includes me and Kathy, and also Sherry Herdina, Forrest Dederman, and Charles Goldman. Thanks to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Western Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, Architecture by Synthesis, and real estate agent Joe Henry. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners, Catholic Peace Ministry, Iowa Physicians for Social Responsibility, Bold Iowa, Birds and Bees Urban Farm, and Climate March. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Iowa Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.